Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm delighted to be here with Brad Hogg to talk about his new book, The Wrong One. Welcome, Brad.
Thanks very much, John. Well, good to be here.
Now, the Booktopia podcast has a lot of varied listeners.
Yeah. You've had me working all day, so this is the relaxed part of the day for me, is it?
Yeah, we've just had Brad signing a pile of 500 of his new book, so it's the relaxing part of it. I just want to get across right from the word go, wrongen. What the hell's wrongen?
Well, that's the ball that comes out of the back of the hand. There were a number of titles that we went through, but the wrongen is something that we came up with. Because apparently that's my best ball that I bowl. So and everyone talks about it. I don't know why, but yeah. So we just put the wrong one out there.
So it's for those uninitiated cricket listeners, that is a cricket reference.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to put return to sender.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I worked out the post office, but a lot of the deliveries or a lot of wrong ones that I bowled did go over the fence and never came back. So
gotcha. I'm with you now. I just want to. Briefly go through some of your career. You've been a test cricketer. You were in the Australia's one-day international team, so the 50-over match. But then you became a god in the 2020 team at a late age. I mean, you've already done. You know, all these people out there who are striving to succeed in cricket, make it a test team. Tick, done that. You've done that. The one-day internationals. I think the World Cups. Done that, and then you walked off in 2007, I think it was, and you just went bye bye cricket, and then you turned up again. And I mean, you're a really old bloke. You're at least what, a year older than me, I think you are. Really, really old. So you're in your early 40s.
I'd say my late 40s. Over 45 now. Closer to 46.
Rounding up. Yeah. It's a sport where people sort of wander away in their early 30s. Why have you hung around? Where's this success come from? And has the actual range of people being able to play cricket expanded because of your success?
Yeah, well, I'll go back to test cricket. I was fortunate enough to play test cricket.
Yeah.
I only played 7 tests. That's because of Shane Warne and Stuart McGill. They were awesome bowlers at test level. And actually, one of the people in the book, Tom Moody, I've got a story about Tom early on in the book in my Shield career. And we were talking about it the other day and why I hadn't played too much test cricket compared to the one-day stuff. And it was probably my patience that caused me not to play test cricket as much as I probably could have.
So you felt that with someone like Shane Warne, I mean, I'd be interested to see what you think of someone like Shane Warne. Was he the greatest? Or if he had some terrible injury early on in his career, would we all be talking about Brad Hogg in the same way?
Do you think definitely not. I think you would have been talking about Stuart McGill in the same way. I think if you look at Stuart McGill's stats, they were at test level, they were sensational. They were up there with Shane Warne's.
But you weren't given the chance. Come on.
Yeah, well, I didn't start bowling these leg spin until my second year of Shield cricket. So, and I guess over the last 5 years, it's probably the time that I've really learnt the art of spin bowling. And it all comes down to patience. But I've been very fortunate that T20 cricket has come around and I've been able to extend that career. I did have 3 years off where I didn't pick up a bat on ball, but that was partly the only reason why I left cricket was trying to save a marriage. Within 6 months, I knew that I'd done the wrong thing. Because at the end of the day, if you're living life, you've been given a gift and you've got the passion to do something and you've been given that opportunity, you've got to do it.
Mm.
You only live once. Make the most of your life. Don't try and please other people. Because at the end of the day, it's your story, not anyone else's.
One of the things that struck me early on in your career was that that you seemed to be really aware of what was going on in the match and really passionate to get the ball and get a go at changing the match, like turning things around. In the 2020 game, it seems to really bring all that to a point because it's such a quick game that if you're not thinking, you miss the whole game. The game's gone. And if you're not on it and you're not aware of what's going on, it seems to be a passion game. If you've got a team member who's not as passionate as you are, you've got to get rid of them because they have to be on for that period. And when you bowl, you look like you are so determined and so aware what's going on and so determined the next one is going to do it. That's part of the fans, you know, why they're drawn to you. I mean, you change a game when you come on.
Yeah, I really love the game, and I am very competitive. I've got a young daughter at home. If we're playing a board game or a card game, I don't let her win, and I even go to great lengths of cheating. And she's even learnt to cheat now, so she's reversing the favour or putting the favour back on me. So she's learning very quickly, and it's good to have that competitiveness. And I think it goes back to my grandma as well. One of my cousins got married the other day, and all the cousins were together, and they all said grandma was hardest on you playing games because she knew that you wanted to play sport for a living and make it to the top, and she never ever let me win. And I think when you're brought up like that, it's really good. It grounds you and gets you ready for life.
Yeah, well, my younger brother, he's 7 years younger than my brother and I, and we tormented him. We didn't ever let him win at all. And he's probably the most competitive person I know personally. he just throughout his whole life, he wants to win. He did basketball and was very good at it. But
well, you should see the Test cricket over Christmas between my brother and I. My brother's 13 years younger than me.
Yeah,
and we play Test cricket out in the backyard. Most of the time he wins, but I think it was about 7 years ago. I came back from the 2007 World Cup. And we were playing the test match there in the backyard. I think it might have been over in April. And everyone's down there in their holiday houses. And the echo of people's conversations go across the backyards. And my brother heard someone say, "Jesus, he's just played a whole season of cricket and he still can't give up." And it was quite competitive. And mum has to come down and tell us to settle down a bit because there is a fair bit of sledging out there. It's quite loud.
Yeah.
And the language has to be brought back in with kids next door.
What do you think of, because someone was telling me the other day that their kids are doing sport at school and it's quite young and there's stripped out competition. So everyone gets a go. Everyone, there's no winner. Everyone's a winner. Like, how do we get new champions if we don't actually torment them like we tormented you as a child?
Exactly right. I had that the other day. I think you should have winners, but I think everyone's got to have a go. Everyone's got to be pushed into play sport, but you can't say that everyone's a winner because when you get to life outside of it, whether you're in a corporate world or a sporting world, you're expecting, all right, I've done my best job, why are you having a go at me type scenario. Yeah. And I said something to a teacher the other day. I said, if I was out at school and I was winning my running race and you told me that I didn't win, everyone won, what has school got for me? Because in an education sense, you give me a D and I'm competing against someone who's got an A and you're making me feel like dirt.
Yeah.
On an educational front and something I'm good at, you're depleting the acknowledgement or the achievement.
Yeah.
So you've got to be very careful in that regard with kids. So some kids are good at sport, some good kids are good with their hands, and some good kids are good on an educational sense. So you've got to reward the achievements.
So, I mean, now that you're changing what it means to be an old man in cricket, because you're vital, young, still achieving great things in the game.
With Moose the other day, he said, "I'm finally growing up." So,
does it give you an edge? I mean, that's what because there's a lot of kids who are playing the same game you're playing, so they're in their early 20s. They may not be the sharpest thinkers yet. They haven't had much life experience. Do you feel that you're just running rings around some of these kids mentally?
I don't know. I think mentally I'm stronger, but that's just. What's happened over time, you become more resilient. I think it's the competitiveness. You come up against some of these young players, they've got the real competitive gut instinct inside them, and they're the toughest players to play against. It's interesting to see why people actually play their sport, whether it's football, cricket, whatnot. I think it comes to it comes back from what's really in their heart rather than whether it's a mental toughness thing or anything. I've seen young players at grade level that really get stuck into me, and it's just because they're competitive and they, you know, they want to prove themselves against me. And that's the good thing about sport, is you want to be challenged, and that's why I love going to the IPL. They're the best players to spin, and I'm still learning over there. And if I'm not learning, there's no point in continuing to play.
Now, you've written a book. Now, this is a tough thing for any non-writer to sort of take on. How did this happen? How did you tackle this? I mean, someone said to you, you should be like writing a book, Brad. And what did you do next? What's the process?
My teammates down there, grade, and actually a few locals where I come from, said, "Oh, you should write a book." And Brett Silvey, who plays club cricket with us, his brother is the author of Jasper Jones.
Oh yeah,
Craig Silvey. Yeah. So they came around and had a chat to us, put us on to Black Ink, and I thought, well, what do people want to know about me? You know, what can you write about? And them sitting down there and starting to talk with Greg Rowden, who wrote it. I just thought, right, well, I've got to go into the darkest times of my life and the happiest times as well, but really be truthful and honest and just say how it happened behind the scenes, what I felt that happened. And it's really a story about, what can you say, my pitfalls in a way. Mm. The gremlins that were behind the scenes. So I've been really open with everything about
it's one
what
thing,
happened.
It's one thing talking about your past with somebody. It's then having that sent back as a manuscript to you, and you're reading your words in print. How was that? I mean, you then had to edit, and you had to say, yes, that's right, that's wrong, this is adjustment here. How was it actually dealing with your story from that perspective?
I think it was good. It was easier than I thought. And the good thing about it is it gives me closure. You know, there's certain things that happened through my career where I've held the grudge. When it didn't warrant holding the grudge, and just being able to put it down in paper, on paper, has really given it closure. And I think with anything in life, if you're having a few issues, you can go to the psychologist or you can go and talk to people, but at the end of the day, if you write it down in paper, it seems to give you closure and more awareness of what happens.
So what were some of the things that you learned in this that gave you that, I'm done with that now, I've written it down, it's finished, I can move on?
I don't really want to give away the stories. That's the thing.
Spoiler alert.
It's just life in general. You know, you think some people have got it against you, and then you realise later on in life it's your actions that were more the problem than the other particular person. So, yeah. But then you realise too that you've got mates out there that are very close and have got your back, but then you're put in a different sort of position and they're in a different role, and all of a sudden they've got to make different decisions. And you know, that mateship of being a team player to being a coach, sometimes you've got to make those tough decisions, and you know, your relationship sort of changes there, but you're still mates. But just the way that you treat each other on a business sense or on a sporting sense can be quite difficult and touchy. And being able to go through your life and write these things down, you realise how to handle it now, rather than back then when I was a youngster, I'd sort of say what I felt.
Yeah.
But now I'm pretty reserved with what I say and have more thought to what needs to be said.
Well, talking about that, I mean, you're now commentating on the game itself. Yeah. How difficult is that? I mean, and who when you went into it, who did you have as a kind of a standard? As I want to be as good as that particular commentator, or
I don't really look up to anyone. I want to be myself, but I think I did it in 2010. First commentary stint was India versus Sri Lanka, and the first thing I asked was, is it coming back to Australia? They said no, and I said, well, I'll definitely come and have a go. but after a couple of years, I sort of got a little too confident and cocky in it, and started going over the top. Mm-hmm. And you know, if a player played a bad shot or bowled a bad board, it's pretty easy to say, "Oh, what's he thinking there?"
Yeah.
And then being fortunate enough to come back and play, I remember playing a game out Rajasthan in Jaipur, and I got a wicket caught in the deep, and I'm running, celebrating, and then I looked up out of the commentary box with the commentators that I was commentating with before, and I thought, if I was commentating, I would have said such and such about this shot rather than this. And it really, really opened it up to being real aware of giving the viewer or even the listener a cricket perspective of it, rather than just saying what's actually happened.
Yeah.
You know, trying to say what's going through the batsman's mind or what's going through the bowler's mind. That particular moment really opened me up to, if I'm commentating again, I've got to do it a lot differently.
And so when you were growing up, did you watch cricket, or were you just so busy playing cricket that you didn't actually
I watched a bit of it. Yeah. It's like all sport. I only watched bits and pieces of it. I wanted to play it. I'm not a very good watcher of it. I just want to go out there and play and learn the skills. It's a bit like mum and dad are playing lawn bowls in Perth, and they're trying to get me down there to play a little bit of lawn bowls. And mum's trying to teach me how to play bowls. And I said, "Mum, just let me learn myself, okay?" "Yeah, but you've got to get coached." "I don't want to be coached. I want to learn it myself. There's no point in getting coached, you know."
Yeah.
I'm a little bit like that. And
how do you sit still long enough in a commentary box? How long are your stints? I mean, if you're watching this game, you just want to get out there and have a bit of a bowl, or...
Well, they're half an hour stints.
Okay.
But the thing with commentary is you've got to try and be creative. I can sit still and be creative. I like that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But if it's just a mundane thing where it's an office job, I'd find it very hard.
Yeah.
And I think if you, during the book, Greg Gerardon was interviewing me, and the first interview went for 3 hours over Skype.
Yeah.
And he went back through the recording, and after about half an hour, he had a headache, because he can hear this click, click, click in the background. I was tapping a pen on the desk and clicking the top of the pen. He was absolutely annoyed. And poor Greg at the moment, he's in hospital at the moment, but I think that's probably, he realised how much of a pest I was. he's got to spend a couple of months recovering.
I want to know about the pressure of the social media thing, because you have close to 200,000 followers on Twitter. Does it mean you can't tweet? Because every time you look at it, you go, "Jesus, there's 200,000 people in the room just to hear my silly tweet. What? How am I going to..."
If I tweet, I only want to tweet something that's funny or tweet something that's relevant.
Yeah.
You know, there'll be a couple of months where I probably don't tweet something.
Yeah.
Or a month that I don't tweet something. So, I'll try and make it relevant. If I'm doing a charity event, I'll tweet that. If I've done something stupid in the backyard, I'll tweet that. But I'm not going to say, "Oh, look, I'm going to bed right now, see you all," something like that.
I ate a burger.
Yeah, or a Happy New Year, something that's relevant.
I love The Bachelor.
Yeah. Oh, but if, you know, even if Sean Marsh or Mitchell Marsh or Adam Voges, my teammates from WA, do well for Australia, or anyone that I'm close to in Australia does well, I don't see the point in tweeting, "Well done." You know, what does the world need to know? "Well done, Mitchell Marsh," from Brad Hogg. I'd rather just send them a personal text, because it's more personal, that, because you've got a relationship with them. The relationship with someone's not over Twitter, it's more over a phone call or over a text message.
So how long do you reckon you'll be continuing on with cricket? Is this book going to be a bookend to your career as well, or do you got to continue on as long as they'll let you play?
As long as they let me play. Look, I had a bit of a discussion with JL. JL was sort of trying to, suggesting that I should retire on a high. Retired in 2008, when I could have played a lot more test cricket at that stage. And you don't get any brownie points for retiring. As far as I'm concerned, I want to go right to the end. And I want to go to the end where I've got nothing else to give in the tank, where the batters are really on top of me.
Yeah.
You know, you're 45, could be 50. Who really cares if you go a year too long?
At the
end of the day, you've got 18 in the squad. If you think you can do the job, if the coach thinks you can do the job, you go out and give 100%. And if the fuel runs out, the tires get bored, well, you go onto the bench till the end of the season and support your teammates. Yeah.
Well, you've always been such a character on the field. It's one of those people that we're drawn to watch because, as I said earlier, that you have this aura around you that you're going to change the game. If you get that look in your face, on your eye, and you go, give him the ball, he's itching to give this a go.
I think it was more the batsman making a rash decision.
Well, you'd lure them into it. Now, come on, it's got to be that. One thing that I was wondering if
lured. Yeah. I can't even catch a fish, mate. So
one thing, if you've ever had Miley Cyrus call you and say, "Oi, dude, stop that tongue thing. That's my gig." Do you know Miley Cyrus is famous for sticking out her tongue in all of her social media?
Look, she's old enough to be my daughter, so I don't think she could ring me up and say that. I think that'd be quite disgusting.
Oh, God.
As far as I'm concerned, she can get her clothes back off, for Christ's sake.
So the tongue thing, which is on the front cover, you can, obviously it's one of your trademarks.
Mind you, with Miley, I do like getting my clothes off too, so... We've got a couple of things in common. Yeah. My office attire at home, because I do work from home, is budgie smugglers and a bow tie when I'm feeling good.
Don't tweet that. Thank you very much for coming in and talking about your book. It's it's a big book for this Christmas. It's a great gift for any cricket lover within the family, and this is Australia, so everyone's got one.
Yeah.
There's no chance of it not being on the bestseller list. Thank you very much, Brad, for talking to us.
No, I think you've been kind there. And yeah, no, thanks for Greg for doing a good job, and Black Ink for helping me out, and for you guys, Booktopia, for getting on the shelves early, or getting out there early. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it goes, but it's funny writing about yourself.
Yeah.
I must say... hopefully Mum and Dad still love me after they've read it.
just skip over certain bits. You know, parents reading their kids' books, it must be terrifying.
No, I've been warning Mum up about it's about certain activities behind the scenes. And she's a little worried about it, let's say. Yeah.
Well, we'll hear about that probably out. I mean, she got on Twitter herself. She can get out there and start telling you.
No, she's not on Twitter. I don't think she likes me being on Twitter, but I've got loving parents, had loving grandparents, so I've had a very fortunate life, and to be able to play cricket and do something that I love, but then to be able to write a story about yourself that hopefully inspires other people, to be able to be put in that position, it's a huge privilege.
Your card should have author written on it now. So you've got, was it actor, cricketer, author?
A few other things. Commentator. We're getting a bit carried away there. When I put farmer down there, because I did spend a bit of time on the farm, Dad put a line straight through that.
Oh, boom, gone. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much, and thanks for the cricket public out there for not only supporting me, but supporting cricket. It's fantastic. If it wasn't for those guys, our dreams wouldn't come true.
Brad Hogg's book, The Wrong One, is available at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.